B-Pod Studios.
Your smart speaker knows a lot about Boston sports.
Stupid me.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub. Something?
Wonder Woman was there, but she's lost all her powers.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv. You can watch the show. You can also get the Twitch app and search the Sports Hub. Apparently, I know my family watches us on the computer, and during the last conversation with Ted and about the whole concussion thing, there were people saying negative stuff, so my son was writing for them to F off.
Love it.
10 years old. Using
junkyard dog.
Yeah.
You taught him well.
Having his dad's back. You raised him right.
He said he told, there was two things he wrote. One was F off and one was no you. So he was, I've raised a man of great wit.
Very good.
Yeah. The Mark Twain of our times.
But this is going to get, strong reaction, I think, on both sides. We're getting, responses on Twitter that are a lot of positive, mostly positive. But there's going to be people like the two callers we had that are going to, who the hell are you to say, take away my rights to say, I don't know what's right for my son or daughter.
What are the percentages here? Because that all the time, and of course, Chris Nowinski, well educated, very thoughtful, well-spoken, and you are obviously well-versed in this as well, and regardless of how well you lay out your argument, there are going to be people that don't like what you have to say, but I'm wondering, of the people you deal with on a day-to-day basis, say, take a cross-section the last 6 months, what are the percentages? Who is for you and who is against you?
100% for.
Really?
I haven't met...
You're not getting any resistance.
No, but I also haven't made public that I'm also lobbying for, a law that would, make... tackling, go away before eighth grade.
Okay.
But everybody I ever talked to, I get so many people, and I was kind of one of those guys that once I told my story to the New York Times about what happened here with the Patriots and my concussions and then the problems, subsequently after that, that happened, there, it's all positive. Initially, it was very negative, disgruntled player. You should know the risks.
What do you mean disgruntled player? Why would they say you were disgruntled?
Because there was people that thought I was making it up, right? That I was lying.
But for what reason?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Right.
People didn't know why he retired in 2005. Maybe they thought Belichick forced him out.
Right.
So, if you know
my story, and rather than I get into the details of my story with what happened here,
sure.
People would say, "Well, I had an axe to grind, right?" Or to that I went public because I had an axe to grind. Well, there was no axe to grind. It was Chris Nowinski. He got access to. I used to live in this apartment in Back Bay, and it was one of those concierge apartments, and I would hide out in this thing. And I was going through a bad divorce, and it was just not good. And I would hide in this apartment, and Chris was able to access the concierge. He'd come up to my room, and he knocks on the door, and he says, "You got to read this article." And it was an article that was written in November 2006 about Andre Waters, a safety for the Eagles.
Yeah.
And Andre Waters committed suicide. And they did an autopsy on his brain, and they discovered that he had a brain disease they had never seen before. This tau protein that had built up in his brain that it was, if you look at a healthy brain, it's lights up, colorful lights and blues and yellows and reds. This was a brain that was dead. I mean, just had no life to it. And I read this article, and it talked about how his kids were with his dad and how he was with them, that he became changed, that he became angry, that he became depressed, that he became a recluse. And I had something that happened to me that I thought, if I told people, there could really help a lot of people, that it could potentially start a conversation. So I decided to tell the story to the New York Times and to the Boston Globe. Jackie McMullen wrote it. They joint released it in February 2007, the Friday before the Super Bowl. The Friday before the Super Bowl. Does anybody know what goes on? It used to go on forever up until recently. The Friday before every Super Bowl, do you know what goes on media-wise that Friday, historically?
Commissioner, right? No, that was...
That's it.
I thought the commissioner was early in the week, but it is commissioner.
It is now. It is now, John. The commissioner always did a press conference the Friday before the Super Bowl.
Right.
Now he has it earlier in the week. The first question out of the reporter's mouth at that press conference, it was the Super Bowl 2007, the Colts played the Bears, was... about that article in the New York Times and in the Boston Globe about what had happened to me, and it helped kind of spark change. They had their first concussion summit. They made it mandatory for every team doctor and trainer to attend in Chicago. You know, if you watch the movie Concussion, it's that they talk about that summit where they didn't let Benin Amalu, the doctor who reportedly is the one that discovered CTE, into the conference to speak. And so that was, I knew by saying something that there was going to be a lot of pushback. And initially there was. And then I went into a deeper hole, right? And I didn't want to be the face of this subject. But over time, the information that's out there, there's this feeling of satisfaction knowing that people understand now what I was talking about, that I wasn't lying, that there was no axe to grind, that it was truly something I just wanted to share because I think it was something that people really didn't know about, and that, you know, there's been validation in what I said. And so now I'm kind of, to answer your question, Fred, I'm happy to talk about it. I enjoy the opportunities to talk about it, and I like that I am someone. I get letters written to me from former high school football players, former small school, college football players. They reach out to me. They do whatever they can to get my email to just talk to me. And there's a huge satisfaction in that. And so I'm happy to be that guy now. Earlier, when nobody understood it and the negativity that was coming my way, it didn't feel good. And it made me really hide out, if you will. But now it's something that I welcome, that I enjoy. And I'm happy to be an advocate for this topic because I think people really need to learn about it.
How long did you hide out? Because I know you did sports radio in Houston and stuff. How long was the period that you didn't feel comfortable, you know, going out?
I would say from 2007 to 2011 were some of my darkest years.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very dark. And it was personal things that added on to it, you know, that's I really don't want to talk about, and not at this point. Maybe that's someday fine. I will. Someday yeah, I might, and I probably will. But it was tough. So I would say that like 4 year period where I'm out in Boston. I'm a dad, you know, a dad with young kids, and I'm out in Boston all night, and I can be a champion going to the top, baby. You know, I'm lucky. I got 3 Super Bowl rings, but I can go down in a blaze of glory with the best of them too. And when I got self-destruction on my mind and I'm hell bent on that, there was a time where that's where I was going. And so it was a dark period from that 07, 2011. I moved down to, I went to a treatment center for several months outside of Dallas. And got cleaned up and got back on track. And I permanently moved to Houston because Boston was like one big trigger.
Right.
And so I got away in 2011, got myself back on track, cleaned up. And that's how I fell on the radio down there. And so, and I got away to kind of get myself in shape. Well, I'm in good shape now. And so I had an opportunity to move back to be near my kids and in a town I really love. And I love the city, and I love that my kids are being raised here, and I love that I'm back near my kids. And so I get juice from being near them. And so everything's good right now. I'm on a good track, and I'm grateful. So that's kind of in the last 15 years, kind of the, what's gone on with me regarding the concussion stuff.
And I just saw on Instagram, someone sent me a video of how you sprint on a treadmill and then you jump off and then get back.
I was wondering if we were going to talk about that today. You know, I mean, we talked about that yesterday on the show.
If you've ever been worried about Johnson, just know that he is a miracle man on the treadmill. Well, good stuff.
Hey, and, but in all honesty, guys, thank you for allowing Chris and I to just to talk about this, because I think it's such an important issue. And we all have kids, and you know, a lot of us have been affected by, you know, with concussions, and he needs to know this stuff. So I thank you.
No, it's fascinating stuff. Yeah. By the way, my son has texted and said that he did not tell anyone to F off.
Why not? That sounds like it was warranted.
No, he said that he just told people, no, you. All right, so Mike Gorman is going to join us in just a moment.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Mike Gorman is the voice of the Boston Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Gorman, hello, sir.
Good morning. Fascinating show this morning. Fascinating.
Yeah, that's because of me.
your line of questioning is very good.
Yeah, did you see me monitor that?
What Ted, you know, those guys are doing is terrific.
Yeah, but you put another host in here, though. They don't get that out of them.
You're the conductor, Frank.
Yeah,
you're doing a great job.
It all comes back to
you. Did you see
me
conduct that interview, Mike? I mean, that's why they pay me the bucks. You understand what I'm saying? That's why
you get a couple of bucks.
I got the new Ford Focus in the driveway. all right. So you were uncharacteristically down on the Celtics the last time that we talked to you. And you said if they go out west and they have success, that could change your mind. Have your mind been changed?
Well, I'm optimistic. I mean, I've gone up and down with this team so much this year, it's hard to settle into one position, but certainly have to come home off on an up note. You've got 3-1 on the West Coast. Tough loss to the Clippers, but that kind of figured after they've been 6 days in Los Angeles. I feel good again about the Celtics. I always feel good about the Celtics. They got the 5 spot right now. That's probably where they're going to end up, 5 or 4, and they'll probably play Indiana in the first round.
All right, so they have this this plane ride that apparently was, you know, this cathartic experience with Kyrie Irving. What have you heard about that? And you've covered this team for a long time. Is this something that's happened before? Like, there's one instance of the team coming together and that swings things around?
Yeah, I can't recall one. You know, it's definitely a great question to ask Gal whether anything happened with the, you know, for the 2 or 3 years he was with that bunch that won a championship. I said this to you a couple of weeks ago when we talked. I just want Kyrie to play basketball. I don't really care about the rest of his life. I just want him to play basketball like we know he can and take this team as far as they can go. All this other stuff about whether or not he lights a camera on when he's walking in the building, whether or not there was even a formal meeting, whether he just was leading the conversation much like you did in the last hour. I don't know. I wasn't on the West Coast trip, so.
No, I know. I know that.
I was free soloing most of the week.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
If you don't know this, Mike Gorman loves to climb rocks without any kind of harness on him. He enjoys getting on the cusp.
El Capitan is next. That's coming this summer.
Yeah. Everyone says they crapped.
It may go this summer too.
Everyone craps themselves at the last 20 minutes of that. I don't know. I'm not sympathetic enough to put myself in his shoes. I was just like,
you've seen the movie though, right?
Yeah, but the problem with that is that I saw the movie, but I had heard him interviewed like 5 times, like an in-depth interview, so I knew everything. It wasn't like a new experience. I thought it was very well shot, obviously. I think it deserved the Oscar. But
without question. And it was I had to find out my wife said, we're going to go see this. And I said, you just got to tell me whether he's live at the end of it or not. And she said, yeah, he is. And then I thoroughly enjoyed it because you knew you weren't watching something where all of a sudden he was going to take a solo dive off the side of the mountain.
But we were talking about this before. Did you ever see Herzog's Grizzly Man?
No.
Where the guy goes in and thinks that he knows the bears. And then ultimately he's mauled by the bear.
It turns out he doesn't know much at all.
I know the story, yeah.
Yeah, there's something oddly satisfying about that.
It's true. You mess
you
with
nature. You
don't
want to see this kid fall, though. Come on.
Yeah. What's that?
You don't want to see this kid fall.
No, I didn't. No, because he's an
But you would have felt
character.
Bad, Fred,
no,
if he did
no,
fall.
No. I would have felt bad if he did fall.
Oh, okay.
But there is, because he's an endearing person, but there is, and obviously there's something wrong with him. But there,
yeah, he's on the spectrum somewhere. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But I should rethink what I'm saying. But yes, there's a certain drive there that you want to find in other people. But with Grizzly Man, if he didn't die at the end, it would have been highly disappointing. But I digress.
Without question.
Yeah, I digress. John, go ahead.
Rooting for the Bears at the end.
That's right.
I just wanted to ask you about Kyrie, and not so much the trip and the plane trip, but overall, Kyrie continues to give interviews about how apologetic he was at taking the leadership mantle in the wrong way and how he's fallible and he's learning on the job. Does he need to be the leader for this team to go where they're supposed to go? And if that's true, are you sold that he has now got himself straight with all of his teammates?
He just needs to be the leader on the court. I don't think they need a formal leader off the court, but they need a leader on the court. And that responsibility has kind of fallen to Al Horford by default. Certainly Kyrie should lead by example. The thing is, sometimes I feel like if you're for Celtic fans, we're talking about the wrong thing here. Because the key to how far the Celtics go in the playoffs is Gordon Hayward. That's the whole story. Kyrie's going to be Kyrie. Kyrie's going to get 25 to 35 points, 6 assists, 3 steals, a couple of rebounds. He's going to do that every night because he's Kyrie. What we need is some guy to step up in the 18 to 22 point area and be the solid number 2 guy. And if that can happen, if Gordon can do that, then all of a sudden, your 3 guy looks really good because all of a sudden Jason Tatum is your 3, or Jalen Brown is your 3, or Marcus Smart is your 3 in terms of having your top 3. They've got a lot of room in that 3 position. The one position is decided. That's Kyrie. But number 2 is a question mark. And if it has to be Jalen or it has to be Jason, then you're asking kids to do something that might be hard for them to do.
All right. This is off the court. I'm going to ask you one more off the court question because I read an article yesterday.
Those are better questions.
No. But this is. I just want your take on this. And Steve, I read one of the worst articles I ever read because it gave no opinion. But it was based on Stephen A. Smith said there was a feeling on the Celtics that Gordon Hayward was getting a break on his poor play from the fans. Because he's white and
oh,
that
don't go there, Steven.
No, hang on a
don't
second.
No, I'm talking to Steven.
Oh yeah. And that the team felt bitter about that. Have you seen any evidence of that?
I've seen no indication of that.
Okay.
None.
That's all. I'm asking you because
in fact, when one of the more bonding scenes because there was one time when the Celtics were all up cheering after all this remarks by Marcus Morris that this team was no fun and they didn't have any fun. So all of a sudden everybody was up and cheering. But it was funny because on 2 or 3 shots I saw, nobody was high-fiving anybody else. They just all were kind of individually cheering. And that's got to change a little bit, I think. We need to be more a team. But if when Gordon Hayward hit that basket to win the, the Laker game?
Sacramento game.
There was genuine enthusiasm on the bench, dumping water on him. They looked like a team. That might be one of the defining moments of this team. If Gordon can be Gordon Hayward, all he has to be, he's not going to be that guy who gets 30 points like he did the other night. But if he could get 21, 22, get 7 or 8 assists, get 5 or 6 rebounds, a steal, maybe a block shot. Then the Celtics will be a really tough out in the playoffs. But if he's a 6-point-a-game guy, that won't be good.
You mentioned about where you think the Celtics are going to wind up and the four, and they'll play Indiana. But Indiana and Philadelphia are tied. They're two games ahead of the Celtics with some time left here. Mm-hmm. Where specifically is the best spot for the Celtics to land? If they somehow, you know, start winning and get the three, yeah, they might have an easier first-round matchup, but that leaves them Toronto in the second round, which I think is a much tougher matchup than Milwaukee. Where is the best spot for the Celtics to wind up?
The best spot would be where they land, because they've been playing really good basketball for the last 15 games of the season. And so I would say go as high as you can. If you can get the number three spot, get the three spot. You're going to have to beat Toronto eventually. So if you beat them in the second round or third round, you're just extending people's vacation period, you know. They got to go through Toronto. They got to go through Milwaukee. They're going to have to probably beat both of them. So why not get it out of the way early?
Hey, Mike, are you sensing that Brad Stevens has starting to have a little bit more confidence in Jaylen Brown? He got off to a slow start, but as of late, it seems like there's an uptick in his minutes. You tend to see him out there more at critical times in the game, at the end of these games. Are you seeing Brad Stevens kind of, you know, maybe not going to make that change to start him over Marcus Morris, but he's going to start to give this kid more minutes because he's deserving of more minutes?
I think he is deserving. I think he's been, you can make a case, he's been the Celtics' best player for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And the other thing Jaylen is doing, it seems to me, it seems to me that Brad has lightened up on the gas pedal in terms of passing the ball around the perimeter so you get a three-point field goal. He's allowing guys like Tatum and Brown to take the ball aggressively to the hoop after an up fake as opposed to stepping sideways and shooting a three. And Jaylen Brown thrives in that game. I mean, he wants to take the ball to the basket all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if again, I don't go too much on starting. I look at who got the top 5 minutes at the end of the game. Those are your five most important players. And I think Jaylen Brown is going to be on that list more often than not.
Okay. All right. Whoa. Well,
wow. Sorry to wake you up, Fred. Yes.
No, I was waking. I was reading something about the Celtics at the time.
Okay.
My Lord. Jesus Christ.
Sorry we interrupted you, Fred.
The amount of pressure that I'm under on this show.
I was fine with the silence.
I mean, it's unfathomable. Usually John can't shut the hell up. So I was giving him that room there.
I appreciate that.
Right. All right. So they go out to the West Coast. They have that success, and then they get killed by the Clippers. Does that mean anything? And then I have this answer to ask you. If you're playing Golden State and then you get ahead, and does Golden State just like quit and just stop trying at a certain point?
They look a little. The game the Celtics played against them, and then they lost to Phoenix the other night too.
Yeah,
yeah. I think they're a little dysfunctional right now. I think they know Durant is itchy and may want to leave. Klay Thompson's been hurt for a lot of the time. I've been saying for the past couple of months, I don't think they're the lock that everybody thinks they are to even get to the NBA Finals. Watch out for Denver. Watch out for Denver.
Houston's playing well, too.
And we're going to see Denver here on Monday. Big tribute to Isaiah on Monday.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
No.
He's
finally going to get his video, Fred. Remember all the controversy last year? He gets the video this Monday.
I didn't even know he was still in the NFL, to be honest.
Yes.
All right.
You thought he had a concussion.
Yes, I thought that there was a lot of things going on. He's a very tiny man. Did you hear about Dolan? Do you think Dolan's the worst from the Knicks? Is the worst owner in sports?
Head and shoulders.
Yeah. Did you hear about him like telling that guy to get out of the stadium? He's going to take away his tickets.
No.
Yeah. He saw a guy. A guy said, "Sell the team."
While he was walking into the tunnel.
While he was walking into the tunnel, and so he had security remove the man from the game
and then ban him from MSG.
It's his toy. His ball.
Yeah, and he says, and then yesterday he said, we were going to invite the fan back to the next game, have him meet the team and show him the team is doing well. And you're reading too much.
What team would that be?
I know, it's not the Knicks.
So that's my question with Durant. Like, what does Durant want?
Well, not too many people talk about this too much, or maybe they haven't. I'm just not in on the conversation. But the Knicks right now have two slots open where they can sign maximum players. So let's say they went out and wooed Kyrie and Durant and then get lucky with the bounces of the balls, which they're going to have the most chance to get the number one pick, and they draft Zion. all of a sudden the Knicks are a top three team.
Yeah, I'm not wild about Zion, but is there still is that playing for the Knicks? Does it still have the same appeal as it did years ago?
You know, it does seem to, believe it or not, because I can't remember the last time I was in a game in Madison Square Garden and the Celtics just pound them on a regular basis when they go play them there. That the Garden isn't full and it's mostly Knicks fans. I mean, New York's just a basketball city. Yeah, I think it's a big deal. And I think if they get lucky with the bouncing ball, it's going to look appealing to someone like Durant. See, Durant, if they were to get both Durant and Kyrie, though, you got two guys who want to show that they can win the championship by being the leader. So that may, as much as these two guys say claim they're good friends, that might be different if they're playing.
New York media will eat Durant alive.
Well, they'll eat Kyrie alive. I don't know why. Well, I can't figure out what Kyrie wants. He has that here. I don't know why he would want to go to New York and do it. I mean, he has that here. Amazing to me that I don't know what these guys want.
He has. He's defied logic in a lot of the decisions that he has made. I don't know. Maybe someone's telling him, like, hey, you got to constantly be stirring the pot. You got to constantly be different. But, if he doesn't like cameras when he's walking in, turn the camera away. I don't care. I really don't care. Like, let's go out and play for me. Play hard every trip up and down the court. Don't take 30% of the trips off. Play hard the whole time you're out on the court, and let's see how far we can go.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, is that if you're complaining about getting your picture taken and the team's winning and you're, not making a lot of noise, that's not an issue at all. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I want to put you on hold. I want to talk to you off the air, okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to put Mike on hold. When we come back, everyone's freaking out about Michael Bennett, and I find it absolutely fascinating that people think that something weird is going on. So we'll talk about that here, the headlines.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The Patriots picked up Michael Bennett on the cheap. He's effective and he's old, but who cares?
33 years old, man.
You know, but
you know, old in football.
You know who's going to be a real threat this year are the Jets. I mean, they've picked up Le'Veon Bell and C.J. Mosley. I mean, look out, please, league.
They're going to be better than last year.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. They'll go 8-8. And
what were they last year?
But they got the third pick in the draft. I'd rather get the third.
What were they the year before that?
I'd rather get the third pick in the draft than be 8-8.
So you're upset that they're getting better?
In the way that they're getting better, yes.
What are they supposed to do exactly?
Surround Sammy D with the right talent.
Okay, Le'Veon Bell can both run and catch.
I don't like his attitude.
He's 27.
I don't like his attitude. And D'Antonio ran him too much at Michigan State.
And Nunua stays healthy. He has someone legitimately to throw the ball to. And with Mosley on defense, you have someone other than a pair of safeties who can tackle.
Okay, so you're right. You have three defensive players now.
But you also have, Fred, I'm a big fan of the D coordinator. And it's like, okay, what is coaching matters more in the NFL than the other leagues?
Sure.
You got Greg Williams, who you might be, a jerk face off, you know, just by kind of how he is.
Watch your language.
I'm sorry. He can coach, and he can put together really good defenses. So
yeah, and then he'll get into it with Gase because he wants to be a head coach.
Oh, you know what? That's actually, I wouldn't be surprised.
No. He had eight offers to be a head coach in the NFL.
Oh, that's so Greg Williams. That's so great. Did you guys watch Hard Knocks this year with the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, yes. The only part I liked is when the fat offensive, line coach.
Wiley.
Bob Wiley.
Bob.
Yeah.
What would Bob Wiley say about the Jets pickups?
Hey there, I once rode in a jet and I needed to get an extension for my seatbelt.
That's what you would say about
okay. I was hoping the music would kick in.
Well,
we don't have anyone to play, so I understand.
Yes. I'd say 99% of the offensive line coaches are characters like Bob Wiley. The one that isn't is Dante Scarnecchia.
Okay, he's
He's all business.
I know you were you're a defensive player, and I know that you probably didn't have a lot of contact with him.
No, Scar was used to be a defensive assistant when I got drafted here in 95.
Well, it shows what I know. But what particularly does, because you hear about, you know, they're relying on this essentially a redshirt rookie to take over at left tackle. What does he do that makes him so much better than everyone else?
First thing you got to do is you got to get the guys' respect. If the guys don't respect you, they won't listen to you. So Scar's got all those guys' respect. Why? Because he will get you better. Okay? He teaches technique, and he's very good one-on-one working with guys. He'll take the time to work with you. You know, he's a coach for all the right reasons. Okay? He's a truly, when he's 6 feet under, the thing on his tombstone, it's going to say football coach. Guys respect the hell out of him. Former military guy. Think he was in the Marine Corps. Think he was a tank commander, if I remember correctly. Carries himself. One of the more disciplined, just people in general. Has a routine. Keeps himself in great shape. Keeps to himself. I mean, but he's hyper-focused on his job every single day. Guys respect that, and he will make you better, Fred. So you will do anything for a coach that you know is going to make you a better player by his coaching.
Okay, when you come out of college, even in your own case, how much did you need to be coached up in the NFL?
I'd say as far as technique, not as much.
Right.
You know, scheme, concepts, philosophies, more. But you still need somebody to teach you technique. And offensive line, so much of it, Fred, about technique.
Yeah.
And, you know, foot placement and hand placement and leverage and feeling the guy next to you so you can feel, you know, you can know when to come off the double team. And there's so many more subtleties technique-wise at that position, I think, more than any other position. So it's something that you need. And a lot of NFL coaches, there's guys that are in the NFL that have no business coaching. I'm telling you, they can tell you where to line up and they can tell you where to drop, but they don't know how to tell you how to be a better player. Dante Scarnecchia makes you a better player.
Give me an example. I'm curious now because these are subtle nuances of coaching that a lot of people know.
Because Solder, you know, leaves and he's a failure, and then you figure that what's his face that just got signed for $1 billion is going to
Trent Brown.
Is you know, the big knock on him is that he's going to leave Scarnecchia and he's not going to be any good anymore.
So what does Scar do differently?
Okay, you know it's kind of like the Bill Parcells effect, but in a totally different way. Like Bill Parcells, you know, what did everybody always say? If you're a Parcells guy, well, that means you will run through a wall for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Parcells guy. I love being a Parcells guy. I didn't make Pro Bowls, but I was a Parcells guy. I like to think that I'm on the all Parcells team. And I want to run through a wall for him, okay? Because he took an emotional investment in seeing me do well. So does Scar. It's like if you have a coach that literally portrays this feeling to you that he cares about seeing John Wall be the best offensive lineman he can be, then you do whatever it takes to not disappoint him. You don't want to disappoint. I remember when Parcells went to coach the Jets. It was like I was playing for the Patriots, but I didn't want to disappoint Parcells, so I played as hard as I could. I wanted to impress Bill Parcells, who was the coach on the other team. Scar has that same effect on his players, all right? And again, he's from a technique standpoint, he's the best, you know? And it's a very difficult – it's probably the most difficult position to coach because of all the moving parts, because all five guys got to be working in unity. One guy breaks down, of course, and is the weak link, then the entire thing fails. So it's respect. He's got a lot of pelts on the wall. He's already, you know, you come in here, you already know kind of what his legacy is, and you know that he's a guy that can make you a lot of money. Trent Brown?
Yeah, a lot of money.
Dante Scarnecchia made Trent Brown a boatload of money.
I know, right tackle that had flamed out in San Francisco and was a scrap heap case.
Yep.
Now the most well-paid offensive lineman in the National Football
League. And you know he's not going to be good anymore.
Right.
And that's the thing.
Well, the theory is now everything I've read in the last 48 hours about Trent Brown is they expect a 40% drop-off in production. Now
that he's come out publicly and said he's not a film guy.
Yeah.
Which I would imagine is a bit of an issue.
That's music to the ears of a guy like Gruden. That's all he does is look at film.
Yeah, Gruden's got complete control of that thing. So that's going to go sideways.
a technique.
Only 8 years left on his contract.
A technique, right. Yeah. This is a big effing deal, people. Yeah. Okay, Mark. The thing that I think is a characteristic in some of the best coaches, okay, they have this is what Scar has. This is what Parcells had. Parcells can tear you down. Scar can tear you down. I've seen him dog cuss his guys up and down. I mean, just verbally berate them. But he doesn't let you stay down. He will swing back around later on in the day, in the week, and he will come back and he'll throw you a fish, as Parcells. I'll throw you a fish. And he'd pump you back up. Look, hey, I'm only hard on you because I think this, this, and this. And all of a sudden, you just build back up. And all of a sudden, even though he embarrassed you and he's not afraid to yell at you in front of everybody, he knows that he's got to make a loop back around eventually to build you back up. And that's how you build good players. That's you knock them down when they deserve it to make a point, and then you come back around and you build them back up, and then you got loyalty and commitment from them at that point.
All right, interesting stuff. We're going to be joined by Billy Jaffe. A Jaffe-Johnson fight would be something that a lot of people would...
Everybody's calling for that. I don't know. You're two big guys in the room. Everybody wants to know.
Well, I mean, one big guy. We thought Jaffe was big, and then you sat down, and now Jaffe doesn't look that
Jaffe's
big anymore.
Jaffe's not so much big as he's an ass in that he, when he meets you, he, like, bear hugs you.
He's a small tank, is what Jaffe is.
Yeah, and then he'll, like, shake your hand too hard. Yeah.
On purpose, just to kind of let you know who's boss.
It's on purpose.
Yeah. Ted doesn't do that. Ted knows he's bigger and doesn't need to prove it. No, I understand.
Jaffe's got little man syndrome.
Right. I got your back, Billy. I'm a big Billy Jaffe fan, man.
You and this friend of mine. I have this friend that's like weirdly obsessed with Billy Jaffe.
He's good. He's very good at what he does.
In Jaffe, it's not Jimmy Barron. It's someone that lives here. All right. We'll be right back.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. You know, they lost Trey Flowers, which doesn't seem to matter. The Patriots are going to be fine.
No more Cordell Patterson either. He got picked up by the Bears.
That's a shame. It was really something else.
But he had a role.
You got to give him respect because he played running back for a while.
Yeah, right hard.
But they got Michael Bennett, who's old, but he probably has a little bit left in him. And there's a lot of controversy surrounding them because he told ESPN that he has a lot of respect for Belichick. And he wants to play with Brady, but he also is looking forward to talking to both men about their support for Donald Trump. And that has freaked a lot of people off. Freaked a lot of people. And he believes the team respects his long record of political activism and charitable work to help the underprivileged. And he is... one of the most vocal supporters of former quarterback Colin Kaepernick. And the idea of him talking to Kraft and Brady about Donald Trump, I don't believe is something that's going to happen.
Or at least we're not going to know about it.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, he's going to have a nice conversation. But people are freaking out and saying, this guy, you know, he's going to disrupt everything with this stuff. What the hell is he going to do?
Yeah, nothing. This is much to do about nothing.
Right. Like, he's going to – I guess they make you go out in the – in Philadelphia, he stayed in the locker room during the national anthem.
Right.
So I guess the Patriots make you come out, and so, like, he's not going to stand for the national anthem. What the hell – I mean, they've already protested before.
Nope. He's going to go out. He's going to get somewhere between 6, 8, 9 sacks. He's going to
– no one's going to care.
He's going to replace Trey Flowers and sack some people and – you know, things will move on.
But people took the quote that he was going to talk to Belichick and Brady about their support of Donald Trump, and they took it like that this is going to be some major sit-down confab that he's going
to
have.
But that's where we're at in this world right now. I mean, everybody's so hypersensitive to that kind of stuff, and there's passion around it, and there's strong opinions on it. And so I think, you know, that issue is an issue that is just very polarizing for a lot of people. But I feel like last year, I mean, it was a non-story. 2 years ago, it was the story.
Right. It depends who's, you know, trying to stir things up in terms of outside of the NFL. But it was interesting. I was listening to Felger and Mass for a minute yesterday, and they said, and I don't even know if Kraft and Brady are that big supporters of Trump or Belichick. Belichick wrote a letter in New Hampshire that
Trump
he read.
The night before the election referenced a letter that Belichick had written.
He read it.
Read it in New Hampshire.
That's about as much as you can support someone in your entire life.
Do you think Bill was like happy about that? You think Bill was
I guarantee you he was not.
See, people
hey,
say.
Hey, Donald, I didn't mean for you to read it to the world.
See, I don't know, but then why do you write the letter?
Yeah.
God bless him for pretending it's 1850 and writing a letter. if you write the letter, I mean, what do you expect him to do? I mean, you know the guy, obviously. So, but I just thought it was funny. They were like, I don't even know if Belichick really supports him. He wrote a letter that he read at a campaign rally. But that's about as much as you can support someone in politics. But Michael Bennett apparently going to be a huge problem by his lack of support for Donald Trump. I don't think that's going to be much of an issue. But Billy Jaffe's here. I noticed that he's not sitting next to Ted Johnson.
I know. He's keeping his distance. You notice that?
Oh, the intimidation fine. Is very real.
Now, Billy and I are good, man. We're so good. Look at that.
Huh? How the hell do you know? Look at that little bro handshake there. Look at that.
You know?
How the do little you know chicken wing.
What? How do you... for work all the time.
Oh.
Here we go. Fred's not sensitive about that at all.
Not coming to work? No, I'm not sensitive about that. I'm sensitive about other issues that I've been wrongly accused of.
Sure.
All right. So no commercials here, just the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.